Welcome to NetFront Presence. I'm Jeff Gordon of the Post-Dispatch, joined by our beat reporter Matthew DeFranks from down in South Florida, where it's he's already shown me a picture of the palm trees out back. So very nice. Here in St. Louis, not so many palm trees. But Matt, let's just jump right in and start with the let's go back in time just a bit and to last week. And Drew Bannister takes over as coach. And right away, we get a little Jordan Kyrou drama that the team had to kind of overcome and Jordan had to overcome. But we'll just call that a learning experience for Jordan.
Yeah, it was a weird night on Thursday. I'm not sure I've ever, been a part of that. I'm sure. I mean, I know it happens before with different teams and even the Blues way back in the day, Pronger and Oates, right? But the fact that it happened so quickly, it was almost like the internet kind of came to life that day. When, I showed up before the game, I wasn't really expecting much because I didn't know how many people in the actual crowd would have seen, the tweet from Jeremy Rutherford of The Athletic about Jordan Kyrou and what he said about Craig Berube. I just didn't think that everyone lived on the internet and was aware enough and knowledgeable enough to have that and bring that into the game. But once they had his name announced at the starting lineup introduction, and you heard, it wasn't an overwhelming amount of boos, honestly, the whole night, but you heard some discontent from the crowd. I didn't quite know what the rest of the night would hold, honestly. And then, in the first period, he's getting booed every time he touched the puck. Second period, it was a little more clear. When he's taking the puck through the neutral zone, he has the puck on his stick for, 5 seconds or something. You could hear him kind of swelling up a little bit more. And yeah, just a really odd experience overall to witness that. And by the third period, you kind of felt bad for him a little bit. And I know he obviously heard it, and he had his emotions the way that he talked about it post game. But just a weird night. Just a weird night, Doro.
Yeah, and I think this thing goes back with Kyrou. Obviously, last year was a difficult year for the entire team, and it really was ultimately, I think, what set the stage for Chief getting dismissed. It was a bad year. A lot of fans blame the fact that the Blues gave Thomas and especially Kyrou those big extensions to kick in this season when the team did that, and somehow that there was rumblings that caused unrest with the team because there were veteran players who had expiring contracts. In fact, veteran players with expiring contracts who would eventually move on last season. So it became, this thing has been an issue for a while. The reality is, though, they were always going to have to make it work with Jordan Kyrou and Robert Thomas, and mm-hmm. they were always going to be the future. Thomas has really responded well. And, Matthew, now it's time for Jordan to respond well. We know he's talented, but it takes more than talent.
Yeah, and like, I think the biggest frustration from fans and even from us, it's from time to time, is that we've seen Jordan Kyrou play the right way before. Like he shows it in flashes, and earlier this season, when he wasn't scoring as much and he was still doing the right things away from the puck, he was back checking hard, he was winning battles, he was breaking up plays, he was doing those things that the Blues really asked him to do last year at exit meetings, right? That was a big thing, that he can't have an off night and have it be -3. His off nights need to be a little bit more even because of the way he plays away from the puck. So we saw that early on in the season. And then, in the last maybe week or two before Berube got fired, it kind of went away. And when you see the 4-game losing streak and you see the way Kyrou goes, it can be a little bit of a causation correlation situation where, he might not be the main issue on the Blues, but he is an issue. And when you see the L's pop up, it becomes a little bit more extra emphasis on him. And, particularly, that Detroit game, the last game of Craig Berube's tenure, he loses that board battle mm-hmm. on the wall and Detroit scores an empty net goal. After the game, Chiefs just says that, that's just a battle. That's just a play that can't happen. He needs to either get it deep, win the battle. You just can't be giving up the game right there. And who knew that would be the last that we saw of Craig Berube as the Blues head coach. So, as you mentioned, the contracts play into it, I'm sure, as well from a fan perspective. And I think you and I are on the same page where we both still think that the contract's going to be worth it in the long run. He scored 37 goals last year. I know he's not on that pace this year, but the chances he's generated, the shots he's generated have generally been there. The shooting percentage has not. So at some point, it should even out. Who knows if it will or not? But the contract itself was, I still think is fine. It's the inconsistency that you see from him, playing well at times, doing things the right way, and then coming back a few games later and not doing those things, and really having a negative impact on the team when he's on the ice.
Yeah, let's talk for just one more second about a few more seconds about maturation. We sat there after the exit interviews and then the exit interview media session where one person after another came in and discussed some of the things that went awry with the team. And I don't think anybody volunteered the name Jordan Kyrou during all of that process there, although I think Chief was certainly asked about him. But it went on and on, and then finally Kyrou comes out, and this is people have spent, I don't know, about an hour talking about what went wrong and the team, and most of them, I mean, it just kept coming back to one guy, without it being fleshed out as such, and then he comes out and he says a few things, but you could tell that his exit interview didn't go well, and he must have been aware that his ears must have been burning. And I just keep going back to that day and then how uncomfortable he was at the end of that whole session because he was already put on the pedestal coming into this season. Things had to change and it really had to start with him. So all of that as a backdrop, Jordan had to kind of pull his head out and make amends. And well, he took steps in that direction anyways.
Yeah, and like what we talked about, bigger picture, beginning of the season, like we both had, realistic expectations for this group as a maybe a fourth, fifth place team in the Central, bubble playoff team, wrong side, mid-80s, high-80s points wise. Like, but this season was supposed to be about developing the prospects at the lower levels, and about getting Robert Thomas and Jordan Kyrou to star status. Right, to take them from 70, 80 points to 90, 100 points and see if they could get there, see if they could be franchise cornerstones to build around. Because they are the reasons why this Blues team isn't in a rebuild, right? They see those guys, they see the age, the talent, the contract, and they say, why should we rebuild only to get younger versions of these two guys in 4 or 5 years, when we already have them signed long term and in the prime of their careers? So seeing those guys develop into stars was one of the big things to watch this season. And Robert Thomas, credit to him, he's had a great year. He's a point per game guy, as a number one center, taking on big matchups, first power play, first penalty kill, all situations. He's had a great year. It hasn't gone that way for Jordan Kyrou. And it's one of those things where you wonder, what is the ceiling? Like, is it a 45 goal score, or is it a 37 goal score that we saw the other day, or last year? I mean, what is it, and when can we see it?
You do know that Robert Thomas is, like I said, he's emerged this year. I think he's tied for third in even strength points, which is a good stat, tells you about his 5-on-5 play. Unfortunately, the world's worst power play has, well, second worst power play, depending on the day, has kept him from gaining any more leverage, any more standing among the top scorers in the league. But that is an important stat. So Robert's in good shape. Now, this team does win a couple games. The new coach bounce gets some 2 games under Drew Bannister. So let's move on to a less pleasant topic here. We'll skip past those because you expect the team to play better after the coaching change, and it did. It wasn't perfect, but it was better. And Kyrou does have a big game coming
Yeah,
back booing.
we should probably mention that, the big game on Saturday night, the
Yeah,
3 point
let's give
game.
them some before we get negative, before we jump into the Tampa Bay game and depress everybody, let's pump some sunshine here. Matthew, that was a heck of a game by Kyrou.
Yeah, I mean, and you could tell the crowd on Saturday was moved, maybe is the proper word, by his comments after Thursday's game. And the way that he sounded and spoke, and had some tears on Thursday, when he had a primary assist on Brandon Saad's power play goal in that first period against Dallas. when he was announced in the arena, you could hear the crowd give a bigger ovation, honestly, for Jordan Kyrie than they did for Brandon Saad on the goal. So you kind of knew that a bounce back was coming from a crowd perspective. You just didn't expect it to be coming from an on-ice perspective as well from Jordan Kyrou. A goal to assist, had that play in overtime that set up Golden Pareko. He was using his speed and going wide on guys, and that's something that Drew Bannister went over with him before the game, showing him clips of when he should be using his speed and going wide on guys. And I mean, that's a great asset for him, and he used it that night. As always, it always comes back to consistency and doing that over and over again. But for one night, it was the right night for him to get back on the right track and to get back in the good graces of the fans. And the on bench interview with Bally and Jamie Rivers was also quite funny to see.
A little salty, but
Yeah.
if you bring your kid to a hockey game, that kid's probably not he's probably accustomed to hearing and seeing some things. So,
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I would. I'm curious how many times, or how many kids out there that was the first time hearing the F-bomb from Jordan Kyrou.
yeah, it wasn't as much fun as being drenched by a beer geyser from let's say Braden Schenn during the Cup parade, celebratory parade, which many children were able to get actual beer on themselves spewed from a beer geyser from the future Blues captain. But these things, it's all real, man. This is hockey. This is all part of the business, right? And it's it gets real sometimes. And good for Jordan. He's not, as we often hear people say, well, he's not a bad kid, but he's also not a kid. He's 25, right? So it's time.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about, you mentioned what Drew Bannister did with Jordan, showing him things and also showing some, he always shows people things they do well, but also shows them things they need to do better. So this has been a process for him, and it was a process for him with Jordan Kyrou. And I guess it really became a bigger process when the egg laying occurred there and on the shores of Tampa Bay. So now he's finding out what it's like to coach the Blues, right? I mean, the bump has passed, and the beating occurred, and so now he is challenged, right? And but he responds. He doesn't seem to be afraid of the challenge.
Yeah, and yesterday's practice in Sunrise down in South Florida here was a little bit indicative of how he would like to respond to challenges, I guess. The first drill of the day was something that I hadn't seen all year from Blues practices, and essentially they took each net, put it in a corner on opposite ends of the ice, kind of tilted towards the corner, and players went one on one. Battle for a puck in the corner and get off a quick shot at the goalie. And so that was going on both ends of the ice with each net. And usually the Blues open practice with a little another small ice game, essentially from the blue line in, and they have two nets close to the walls there, and they play 2-on-2. So a little bit 2-on-2 small ice, but this is not 1-on-1 in the corner. You have nowhere to go. You just have to compete and battle for the puck. And when I asked Drew Bannister about the drill after practice yesterday, he's basically saying, yeah, we didn't compete to start the game in Tampa, so I wanted to compete to start the practice here. And it's telling that that was one of the focuses of how you design a practice is you want that competitive drill right off the top because the team didn't compete the night before. And even at one point during practice, he stopped practice and he talked for 5, 10 seconds about the need to communicate more with each other. And when I talked to him about that moment, he said, well, there are just so many things that can be solved by communicating with each other. And that's probably something he said. They were a little bit of a quieter bunch the other night. So the small things matter for Drew Bannister at this point because it's only been a week or 8 days or whatever it is of his tenure with the St. Louis Blues. So it's a small sample size, but every single event or action reaction is something to go off of and kind of base what his audition is like for the job. And Doug Armstrong was watching practice yesterday and the arena in Sunrise, and I think he made notice of that first drill, the competitive battle drill, and in the end, he has to show that he brings competitiveness and accountability, because those are the two things that Doug Armstrong asked for from a new coach. And we'll see how it all shakes out the rest of the year, however long Barry Bannister ends up being the coach. But we've seen inklings of both of those things so far from him in the first week plus.
Yeah, and let's talk a little more about accountability. There is a limit to accountability in today's game because of, roster construction, cap constraints, the managers of the team, the general managers really aren't able to make much in the way of changes until much closer to the trade deadline. That's the nature of the game. So you have words to the team as a group, to individuals. You have video review, which is, can be painful or it can be uplifting or both. You've got practice, which you've just described, which where you can make guys, in a sense, pay a price to a degree for a poor performance, but it's a way to try to raise the compete level. But it can be somewhat punitive, maybe not Tortorella level punitive, but punitive. And then ultimately, too, in-game changes, and you saw that as well from the new coach. Did not waste time. Pavel Buchnevich, I will pump his tires all day and all night. I love the guy, but lazy penalties, man, and lazy plays leading to lazy penalties. Can't have it.
I was intrigued, I guess I would say, by Drew Bannister after the game. I asked him about Buchnevich not playing the last 12 and a half minutes in Tampa, and he basically just said, yeah, I mean, he took three penalties. We don't need players taking penalties like that. We need him on the ice and playing well, and he's a player that we need to be playing well on the ice. And that was pretty clear. That was pretty evident from seeing the game. But when he followed it up with, this is not just a message to him, it's a message to our whole team. If you want ice time, you have to earn it. I found that was an interesting way to phrase it, or message to send. And the thing that I think about when we talk to players, coaches, management, and when they talk about other people in the organization, I most of the time envision that this is the third or fourth time that those words have been said, but the first time said to us publicly, as in whatever they say to us, they've already said to the player itself, to the team itself, to the coach, whatever. Like whenever we talk to them, I just kind of imagine that that's already happened. So I don't know how much time there was after the game for Drew Bannister to talk to Buchnevich or during the third period and say, hey, this just isn't acceptable. But the thing, what's the thing I always say? Players may lie, coaches may lie, but ice time never lies. And ice time didn't really lie on Tuesday, and it should be over and done with now. Buchnevich played on, or practiced on the first line yesterday in Sunrise. No morning skate today for the Blues, because they're spending their hotels on Fort Lauderdale Beach, so it's 40 minutes out to the arena and back, so they don't want to do that drive too many times in one day. But he was on the top line with Thomas and Kyrou yesterday, and expect him to be receiving his normal minutes again later today.
Yeah, it must be stressed with certain players. Some guys are just sort of, habitually need butt kicking, prodding. In a case like a guy like a Buchnevich or any of the other veterans, they're going to have days like that when frustration gets the best of them. The game went horrible. It went horribly wrong. It just started and stayed bad. Guys get frustrated, and sometimes frustration leads to that versus, they can act out and overdo it. They can become exasperated and then and play exasperated. So in the case of it's just a coaches have to find that line of resetting players without going out of their way to embarrass them, which sometimes coaches will do. And it's a fine line to walk. But let's face it, Drew Bannister has been given a mandate to turn things around, and with no guarantee that this could last long at all. So he has no reason to hold back. He's got to try everything he can that he sees that he thinks he would do or that he should do. No reason to hold anything back. This audition could be weeks long, right?
And like the other thing, I think there are two other things that we should probably touch on this topic, is it was a 6-0 game at the time, right? So it's not like you're benching him in a one goal game where you actually really need him, and that would be a bigger message to send. I mean, this was 6-0. We know he didn't get the power play time at the end of the game, and that was kind of the first signal that things were amiss. But it's easier to do in a blowout than it is in a tight game when you truly need that guy on the ice, and you need to, and you probably it's harder to send a message when you have to battle back and you need him contributing to your team. So that's one thing. And the other thing, Pavel Buchnevich is notoriously hard on himself. We remember that from earlier this season where he basically said he's been horrible all year, and he was, just trying to contribute to the team in some way, And that was during his slow start of the year, and he got going, obviously. But whatever, like I mentioned before, whatever Bannister says, I'm sure Buchnevich has thought himself. He's pretty honest with himself, and has got to be frustrated with those three penalties, and how that makes his game look, and how it makes the team game look. So I think those two factors are important to point out. I'm not sure how well Bannister knows Buchnevich's personality at this point and knows that he can do this with him and kind of have the message be received because of how accountable Buchnevich is to himself. Because a lot of the veterans don't know Bannister, and Bannister doesn't know all the veterans either. He knows the young guys from the AHL, but all these veterans, these 30 somethings, these late 20s guys, they don't know each other. So I don't know if he knew that Buchnevich's personality well enough to say he knows what he's been doing wrong. He understands it, and we're gonna be good coming out on the other end of this.
And that'll be as they go forward. So, and you've written about the challenge that Braden Schenn has through all of this difficulty, right? How important is Braden Schenn through this process of being the communicator, one of the communicators to the coach, a guy that, again, another guy that holds himself accountable and who's not immune to having a bad day himself, but as a guy we all know is a heart and soul type guy. So it'll be interesting to see how, navigating this. How important Braden's role will be as captain in a very difficult situation, and for a guy who takes his role very seriously.
Yeah, I mean it's been a heck of a what 10 days now for Braden Schenn. I mean, the longest tenured blue is traded Robert Bortuzzo. Verana, we thought was going to be the biggest story of the week when they put him on waivers. Nope, coach fired. Star player booed. An overtime win. I mean, they came back from multi goals against Dallas for the first time all year. So, and then it's just been thing after thing after thing for Braden Schenn, and he's already not having the year that he would have liked or that anyone would have liked. Production wise, worst season in at least a decade. When I looked a few days ago, it was when he was 22 years old in Philadelphia, and in the last few days I'm sure his point pace has gone down. I'll have to relook up what his what this season's gonna look like in terms of his career. But he's mentioned at times before he's thought about the pressure of being a first-time captain and let that affect his play a little bit. And it's not really what you would like to see out of a 32-year-old guy who's been around the league for, I don't know, 12 years or something like that. And then the other part of me just wonders if this is just a natural decline in his game because of how he plays. He's a physical power forward that has played this way for a long time. He's been in the lead for a long time, and his age just catching up to him. I know 32 isn't really super old, but it is older, right? And I wonder if that's part of it, in addition to kind of the pressures of being a captain and trying to lead a group through all this stuff.
Yeah, you can feel it. Like you can shoulder too much responsibility in his role, right? And that responsibility is heavy. And on those 32-year-old legs, and they've been hard years in the NHL. Some guys
Definitely.
could be, Phil Kessel played every game. Well, you need hot dogs between periods, right? I mean, it's different style. God bless him. Phil's a fine player. Just that's how Phil plays. But that's a lot. It's a weight. You feel responsibility for the group. That's a lot of responsibility for a guy that's already trying to play his own game, right?
And I think the other thing that hasn't really helped is all of these blowouts. They've been losing so many games by so many, like all 15 of their regulation losses have been by multiple goals this year. The only one goal loss they have, if I'm remembering correctly, is in the season opener in a shootout in Dallas. Every other loss has been by multiple goals. They've lost, I want to say, 10 games by 3 goals, 9 games, something like that. They've lost three of them by 5 goals, which is only trailing San Jose. And so, just a little inside baseball here, when they do get blown out, and the Blues PR talks to us about who we want to speak to after the game, generally they'll ask us to choose from the four players with letters on their chests for those blowout games to serve as spokesmen for the team. So that means Braden Schenn is talking after all a lot of these blowout losses because he is the leader of the team, and taking some public vocal responsibility for the game. So I'm sure the blowouts haven't helped, is what I'm trying to say.
Right. And
Yeah.
again, you're just his role is he once again he's got to step up and assume responsibility, for the group. And not that he doesn't mind that. He wants that response. He's not hiding from it, but he's a human, and it comes with a cost. So a couple other things before we let you get back to work here, Matt. Sammy Blais gets a chance to play, it appears, because Hughie Guillen, who's the little buzzsaw, got good words from Drew Bannister, who did like his play down in Springfield, liked his play with the Blues, but Hughie's role is what it is. They need to find out if Sammy Blais can be a contributor. And so now Sammy's had to watch some hockey. Now Sammy's going to have to play some hockey.
Yeah, and before we get to say, I just want to touch on Mundane while we're on him. I think every single game I thought he was going to score his first goal. It looked like he had a chance every single game to get that first goal, including against Tampa. And I think he was actually pretty decent in Tampa, all things considered. But yeah, Sammy Blais has been healthy scratch, I believe, 5 out of the last 6 games. He was practicing on the fourth line yesterday, expected to go back in the lineup against the Panthers tonight. And for him, he mentioned that he's lacking some confidence right now. That, there are times where he'll look back at some of his old clips to remind himself what kind of player he is in the NHL and what kind of player he can be. Because when you're on the fourth line, and when your biggest job, really your biggest attribute right now, has been hitting on the forecheck. And even sometimes those hits haven't been on time enough to create stalls and create turnovers and ozone time chances, goals, right? He hasn't been doing that enough on the forecheck. At least that was the message from Craig Berube when he was the head coach. So I think right now the Blues know what Sammy Blais is. And I think out of the three acquisitions last year, when we look at Vrana, Blais, and Kapanen, Blais was always the least likely to repeat his numbers and his performance from late in the year. But I don't think that we quite saw it going like this, where he's a healthy scratch pretty frequently. And so we'll see what he brings on that fourth line. And then, I know Majang is a bit smaller guy, but he tried to play hard. But even now, look at that fourth line with Machacker and Sundqvist and Blais, and those are three guys that'll throw the body around.
Right, and there is some trust there between Bannister and Mac there, who's
Yeah.
kind of out of hockey. There's a guy he's got a significant NHL experience. Did a nice job for Carolina when he had to step into the postseason a bit last year, coming up from Chicago, and his speed and little size, physicality. So it's understandable why he's getting an additional look. All right, last thing on this edition of Netfront. I have said on this podcast that, well, look, this team's not going anywhere. It needs to play Scott Brunovich, see what, develop this guy. Apparently, Drew Bannister does not agree.
This was one of the mild surprises to me so far, because when I talked to Perunovic about Bannister in the AHL, he basically said, yeah, he let me play my game. He let me be free and be creative and make mistakes. And I understand it's the AHL, it's a developmental league. You're going to allow your prospects to be themselves and to do those types of things. I just would have thought some of it would have translated to the NHL at this point. And when I talked to Bannister the other day about the third pairing about Scandella and Tucker. He mentions whenever he looks at the film, he likes, what they're doing. That's maybe hidden when you watch the game for the first time live. And when I talked to him about Tucker, I said, "Hey, what are the aspects of Tucker's game that have translated from the AHL to the NHL?" And he pointed out, "Yeah, he's a stay-at-home old school defenseman, but he also can skate and get up in the rush." And when I heard that, I was a little taken aback. You don't really think about Tyler Tucker and his skating ability and getting up in the rush and transition. So I think right now, the two things that we talked about before with competitiveness and accountability, you can see why he would lean into Tucker for that a little bit, just based on the way that he plays, the style he plays. I mean, he's had two fights in 3 games that Bannister's been around. And so, not saying that he's a better player than Scott Perunovic, but that competitiveness is more outward facing. I think we see it from Perunovic in different ways, but the way that Tucker plays and the style that he brings seems to have brought the coaching staff a little bit more comfort in why they're chasing those things.
Yeah, I've never minded Tucker joining the rush. That he can do that. It's the turn and recover, which is going to be a problem for him. But look at he took on a big boy. Took on a big boy in front of his dad
Yeah,
at the end, and that was for real there.
that was about.
Brady's no, it's no joke, man. Matthew's a good talker. Brady's legit. My daughter, who's going to in town, coming in town to watch the Blackhawks game. For the holidays, he was most impressed with that, and I said, "Oh, Brady's a legit monster. Matthews talks, and he can fight him, but Brady, irritable, violent."
I think the last few times I've seen Brady Tkachuk in person, I've just been floored by how massive of a human he is.
Oh,
Like
yeah.
he's built and he's tall and he's strong and he plays that way too. Like he's an impressive guy.
He does not look like an accountant. He looks like a guy that's ready for battle, right? He just looks like a guy that's ready for battle. So anyway, so yeah, full marks. I tell you what, man. And when Bannister had Tucker down in the minors, he knows what kind of competitor that guy is. And so Tucker's got a spot with this team going forward for some time based on that compete level, that toughness. Somebody's got to be that guy. Bortuzzo's gone. And so, you're going to need guys like a guy like Tucker some nights, and he's there. He's up for it. So.
Yeah, and like they still do need Scott Perunovic. They do need to see what he has and get him some time. And like, I don't really want to see him be scratched for 6, 7, 8 straight games, because we still have no idea what he can do for a full-time spot in the NHL. I mean, he hasn't had the season I don't think anyone would have wanted, from point production, from the power play, but you still would like to think that there's upside there, where you kind of know where Tucker's ceiling is. So they still have to get him in the games and in the lineup. But I'm a little bit more okay with the rotation just because Perunovic hasn't really done a ton to ensure that he remains in the lineup.
All right, well, that's it for this edition of Net Front Presence. We've kept Matthew a little longer than usual, but with the team out of playing in the Everglades tonight, they're not having their skate, and Matt will need some time to get out to the Everglades to see the game. So we'll let him get to that. For Matthew DeFranks, I'm Jeff Gordon. This has been the Net Front Presence. A reminder, you can tell your friends you can find this podcast not only on our website, stltoday.com, but also on your favorite podcast app. And if you're not a subscriber, digital subscriber to our online product where you can find this podcast. Man, we got a lot of good stuff on there, a lot of video, a lot of extra content that you can't get in the print edition, which is fine in itself. So, reminder, please do support local journalism. We're out here doing the best we can for you. For Matt, I'm Jeff. Until next time, see ya.